Always great to have the champ with us on a Monday morning. Good morning, James.
Morning, half. 7-5. That's how I'd probably take the first set off you if we were to play.
Mate, there's no way.
I'd let you have the first set, then it'd be 6-love, 6-love, and out you go.
There is no way.
You'd probably spit the dummy.
Mate, would he be bundled out?
Yeah, you don't ever lose, do you, in tennis? You crash out or you get bundled out.
No. So, well, I don't lose, so I wouldn't know. I
always love the news when it comes in, especially Australian Open time. Australian players crash out of the Australian Open. You know what? They ran in the number one seed early. You're probably going to lose that one more times than you win.
Yeah, often happens. So the seeding is the seeding for a reason oftentimes, yeah. Jim.
You never just lose. You crash
defeated.
Out.
Defeated.
Yeah.
Sent packing.
James defeated Daniel.
Sent packing is a good one.
Sent packing. I like to be sent packing.
Yeah.
I haven't been sent packing for a while, Jim.
You know what?
He got caught.
Bartel came against Federer. You know what? He got beat. Most people thought he was going to get beat. He got rolled.
Let's be honest. You got the floor wiped with you from Roger.
Yeah, but I said 7-5 in the first.
That was me.
Oh, okay.
Not Roger.
Oh, you're not going to put yourself up there?
Roger took you to school.
What are we talking about?
Oh, I don't know. Tennis.
Tennis.
Did you know that Daniel won't play me in tennis because he knows he'll get beaten?
Oh, you're the la-la.
You keep whinging about your cartilage in your knees.
I'd still beat you.
Give us a spell. Well, hang on. This is a little challenge here, I believe.
I've wanted to challenge him for years.
So you would still be happy right now
to
play half in tennis and you think you would comfortably win?
Yeah, I do.
Have you already set up a loser's limp, though? You've set up a loser's limp.
I am what I am.
Hang on. When you say comfortable...
I am what I am.
Comfortably, what is comfortably?
I'm not an animal.
6-2, 6-2? What are we talking about?
Well, I've never seen Daniel play.
Well, you said you beat him.
I would. I expect I'd
beat
him.
But what's comfortably?
I'd like to give him a bit of a chance. I just do enough to win.
Why have you got so much faith in your ability?
Because I'm very good.
What are you bringing to the table? Are you crafty?
This is a football segment, not a tennis segment. This is a breakfast conversation.
Take a set off. Who are you going to take a set off?
Angelique Kerber.
Very specific.
He laughs.
Why are you just Angelique Kerber?
Well, because that was
former number one player in the world. Anyway, we digress. James.
Yes, Daniel.
Is the top eight set?
No.
It's not?
No.
Oh, no. Good. I like this.
I don't think it is. I'm not ruling anyone out just yet. Just yet.
Is that because the Giants are 10?
No. The ones currently in at the moment, and it's if they had a full list of players, they're set. But the unfortunate thing for West Coast is every week they seem to lose one. And then they seem to lose the good ones too. And that was an unbelievably gutsy win, I thought, from West Coast, who have been poor on the road.
Yep.
They lose Brad Shepherd early in the game. I know Carlton people will talk about Carlton a bit later, but I'm just talking about West Coast.
Yep.
Shepherd's been a super player, underrated in a way, even though he's all Australian. Yep. They lose him early, which structurally affects them. Flying Ryan got a bit of cramp in the last quarter as well. Played a lot of young kids who I thought were super. There's a few that I like I like the look of the kid.
Yep.
I really like the look of Harry Edwards.
That's Tyson's boy, isn't it?
No, that's Luke.
Luke, the other one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Luke was very good on debut as well. Had some composure, surprise, surprise, being the son of Tyson Edwards, who, speaking of underrated, his career's been underrated grossly. He used to brain us.
Tyson Edwards?
Oh, so good.
Champ.
So good. Could play anyway. Anyway, we keep getting sidetracked. But but West Coast, it's not disrespecting West Coast and their supporters get a little bit funny. Oh, you forget about us. But if you keep losing Kennedy, Kelly,
Allen.
McGovern, they're just one after another. Shuey.
There's a couple more that we're forgetting here.
Yeah, I know. But so they just one after another. And sometimes you run it. Then you run into side. So Richmond, who are hot, they got Richmond, McGovern. Dogs, Swans in the next few.
Mm.
It's just how many wins they can get, like holding the fort. That's why yesterday is important for the Eagles. Are you still knocking on the door, Essendon propaganda boys? Because if the eight's not set, will your chance to come in?
I didn't have that, obviously, a win for Essendon. No. I think they can get to 11 or 12. They could, but that's best case scenario.
All right, let's turn around. Who are you guys putting out to have your bombers in?
I'm not putting anyone out. I think it's set. The only team I think is a little vulnerable is Sydney.
Yep.
Sydney?
Yep.
At 8-4?
Yep.
3 games in?
Yep.
All right.
So if Sydney went
They're
five,
the only one I could have as out.
So if Sydney go 500, to use the American term, they're in.
They got Hawthorn on Friday night.
Yeah.
They'll win that.
Yeah, I think I don't think they're playing nearly as well as they were playing at the start of the year. But they're finding a way to win. And that's what they've done the last 2 weeks against Carlton and St Kilda. They've coughed and spluttered their way over the line. Their midfield is down, particularly numbers-wise. A lot of their more experienced players just aren't getting the footy as much as they were, but they're finding a way to win. I just don't think they're playing as well.
So after Hawthorn, they go the Port Adelaide Pair, West Coast Eagles. West Coast might be down to 10 men on their list by then. The Bulldogs.
Tough.
Tough.
And then they get the Giants, who should have a number of players back by that stage.
No, to win. Sorry, Jim. That was just to antagonise.
I appreciate it.
Well, tiebreaker games.
Yeah, apart from the Bulldogs. I mean, the Bulldogs should win that game. Mm. But outside of that, they're all tiebreak games. But they've got the Hawks this week to get to 9-4. That'd be helpful. They
shouldn't Sydney Hawthorn Friday night. Ugh.
Well, it's a bye round. So this is what happens in the bye rounds. We get average games in key slots.
No, thanks.
They have to play each other at some stage, Renner.
Oh, no, but not Friday night.
Well, while we're talking about the scheduling, do we know what's happening with Port Adelaide and Geelong yet? Is that going to be happening? Because one of the assumptions this week, or last night, was that Geelong would have to go into hotel quarantine to save their families from having to be in house quarantine.
Yeah, correct.
For this week, because they'd be dirty, according to the South Australian government. Is that right? Did I read that right?
Correct. Yep. So Geelong is obviously regional. They're out of lockdown.
Yes.
But because of the strict lockdowns that the AFL want on and governments want on Victorian teams still. So Geelong players with kids, they're all going back at school and the like. They're doing all that sort of stuff. But if the player stays at home.
And it is strict quarantine.
Strict.
So no one's out of the house.
Nope.
I wonder what they'll do.
Hotel.
That will happen?
Yep.
Everyone goes to the hotel?
Yep.
Next stage, you'll be playing with motorbike helmets on.
Not a bad idea.
That's if it goes ahead on Thursday night. There's still some conjecture about whether or not that will.
Really? They're confident that it will, though.
Yeah, it hasn't been confirmed.
No, but that's confirmed. This is what they do, the governments, though, isn't it? They just sort of, they're in control. They've got the power, and they'll let them play in the end.
It's a stretched out weekend too, Rama. It's Thursday to Monday this week. One game Thursday, one game Friday.
Silly on a
bye two games Saturday, two games Sunday, one game Monday. And that's with an extra one thrown in. With the West Coast Richmond thrown in, it's going to be seven games this weekend, five
it's
games.
It's not a super weekend. Round of football.
No,
but look at it and go Port Adelaide, Geelong, good game. West Coast Richmond,
good game.
Maybe a good game.
Mm. West Coast has got potential to be a good game.
Yeah.
Melbourne Collingwood. Well, after the Pies performance on the weekend, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Mm. Let's go to Friday night, Jim. Let's go all the way back.
In the Wayback Machine.
In the Wayback Machine, because we had a really good encounter. 1v3, I think it might have been prior to the game. Melbourne looked all at sea in the first half against the Brisbane Lions, who put on a really good show. And then all of a sudden, something changed at halftime, Jim, and the Demons said, you know what, we don't care what's happened in the last 50 years. We're a really good team right now, and we believe we can. We're going to do it.
Yeah, can we do cut and paste here on each Monday for when we talk about the Demons? And the same words keep coming up is maturity.
Yes.
And it's actually belief in the system that, you know, you mightn't crack a side in the first half, but it might be the... Cameron Ling always used to say this to us down Geelong. It might take the last 4 minutes or the last minute of the last quarter, but if we stay strong to what we know, it will happen. Now,
so talk me through that, because I reckon that's good mindset and good conversation about this generation, this evolution of the Ds. Mm. What does that do for you? When Ling used to say that, what did that do for the group?
Well, it emphasised what Melbourne are doing really well, what Richmond have done well for a number of years, my Geelong side, probably the Hawthorn great side, is that just be a master in your role and don't step outside that. Become a master in it. We'll celebrate it. And I've spoken about this. We'll celebrate Alex Neil-Bullen and Charlie Spargo on the forward line as much as we'll celebrate Christian Petrarca.
Yep.
And we'll celebrate Harrison Petty as much as we celebrate Stephen May and Lever and Salem down back. Now, if you just keep... stay into your role and what you do, and you do it really well, and you master it, Simon Goodwin will come and pat me on the back and the coaching staff. Don't step outside that. Now, that takes it away from, you know, when you hear sides go, oh, we don't focus on the scoreboard. That's actually what it is. It's not worrying, oh, geez, I've got to go get another four or five touches to make us good. Forwards, oh, geez, I need to kick a quick two here for us to get us back in front. That's being the individual. Although the intent's right, I'm trying to help us win. It's not the right way to do it.
Mm.
It's reinforcement.
Yeah.
From a senior player, when you hear that, it's reinforcement. It's okay. Yep. what we know, what we do, will eventually be good enough. We just need to be close. We just need to be close. Now, at halftime in that game, it was 20 points. It got out to 22 points at one stage. But what I found most impressive about Melbourne on Friday night is that tactically they didn't go and change. They didn't go and, you know, flip the magnets or go and sit on a particular player. They got to work around the contest. That was the biggest thing. They were, I think it was plus 10 clearances, Brisbane, plus 20 contested football. And then they flipped that. They completely turned that in the second half.
Yeah, and it was intent. Like, you hear Christian Petrarca post-game, yeah. Geez, we're boring.
Yeah, yep.
And that's the difference with Melbourne this year. And even when I watched the last, you know, sort of 15, 20 minutes of Richmond on the weekend, sorry, Bombers boys, is their intent when the game is on the line is not to retreat. It's to keep speed on the game, keep attacking, keep repeat outnumbering, take the game forward. So a number of times with Richmond, and I saw this from Melbourne, as well as you take the contest on and you move the game forward. You just don't bail out, take the safe option, or go backwards, sidewards. That's their very, very last resort.
Yep.
Like, you take the tackler on, it creates that overlap, which helps you score.
Let's have a listen to Simon Goodwin after the win on Friday night, the D's victorious over the Brisbane Lions.
I think the group's been terrific at being able to reset in game right throughout the season, but that's as impressive as we've had, you know, to come off the back of last week's game into another Friday night game and be under the pump at halftime, you know, 20 points down. Our ability to respond and get the game back, you know, looking like a Melbourne game and feeling that way. You know, I'm incredibly proud for them and also rap for our supporters.
Simon Goodwin, rap for the supporters. Just maturity is what he was saying, what Jim was saying there.
Just a question for the three of you who've been involved in a halftime situation. Is that when things aren't going well, it's not a question of the coach just saying, try harder.
No.
What are you being told at halftime to change? Are you seeing edits? Are you,
now
is
you
it
are.
Whiteboard stuff? Is it heck? Because Melbourne clearly changed, yep. And changed quite dramatically. They didn't panic, but they changed.
You look now at halftime, because the cameras get into the room, obviously very close. They get into their groups, their midfield, their forward, their back, and there's a big TV always sitting there. There's particular edits. A lot of the midfield stuff will be around, well, who's at the source? Who's in that? Who's in the 1 meter radius? And then who's on the outside of that 5 meter radius? So that would have been shown clearly for the D's. The defenders then are shown, well, where are we? Where are we with our direct opponent? Where are we with our drop-off? What are we doing here? Are we allowing easy hit-up? There's an easy hit-up for Brisbane in that first half. So Hipwood was on top, no doubt, in that first half, and Zach Bailey was on top. He was roaming in that first half. So tighten the screws on those. Then the forwards. Okay, what are we doing? What's our work rate like? You look at Cozzy Pickett in the third quarter. His work rate lifted enormously in that first quarter off they went. The other part, too, is that as an overall team, will look at run. You look at your overlap run. I thought Melbourne started to run in that second half. Overlap run. Trent Rivers a number of times from half back. He may have not have got the ball, but he was running. He was creating space. He was enterprising with what he was trying to do.
Jimmy, you talked about that in the coverage yesterday in the Carlton West Coast game. We got run from behind and overlap run and these sorts of things.
So important.
So is that an intent thing or is that an intensity thing? Why does it not happen from a first half perspective to a second half? I know you're playing against an opposition, so that's half the battle. But
yeah, Rama touched on it with a couple of points. There is, you've got to be able to identify it quickly. Now, it comes into a couple of areas for me. If I'm sitting in the coach's box, firstly, is it structurally? Is that the reason why we can't get it done? So, meaning, do we have the right amount of numbers at the stoppage, or we got, you know, we're playing deep enough with our forwards, or are they up high? So, real structural sort of thing. You go, well, am I putting the players in a position to actually thrive and win this contest? If you think, yeah, we're pretty good, well, then it comes down to positioning in the structure, as Rama was talking about. Maybe our backs are just giving a little bit too much leg rope, which is allowing, you know, Hipwood and as he mentioned, Bailey, too much space. So then you sort that out. So it's positional in the structure. Then it might be, well, the position's pretty good. Well, then is it a like an actual personnel thing? Have I got the right mix? So you're sort of just going through this almost flow chart. Yeah, checklist. This is what I'd be doing in the coach's box. Well, okay, I'm just making up is the mix of Oliver, Harms, Petrarca the right mix? Do I need to throw Cozzy in a little bit more because we need some forward, a little bit of creativity to open up the stoppage to expose Brisbane on the outside? That's just a hypothetical. So I'd be doing that. Is it then a player thing? And then if you get to the last one where it just then turns into a motivational thing where that's where it might be the rocket. It might be, you know, the cuddle, like, hey, Cozzy, you're awesome, mate. When, you know, you hit front and square, we need you. A bit of energy. Can you give us a bit of bounce on the forward line, create something? Backs, you know, Jake Lever, can you just, you know, maybe start peeling over? You can be a little bit more creative. Just play on. Make it up as you go. You know, Christian Salem.
Yeah.
Like, not too slow. Let's just get moving a bit forward, which was what Christian Petrarca was talking about. Jeez, we're boring. That's where you're going around, going to guys, hey, come on, show me a bit. Like, be a bit creative because, you know, the flow-on effect is, Christian, if you roll off the mark, all the forwards will start moving. Forwards are naturally, if you go off the mark, the forwards will move. If you go slow back off the mark, they just can just put their hand up and go, hey, just lob it in deep here. So that'd be my flow chart of four things. That's a real just basic way of explaining it.
No, it's good.
What a good senior player does, an experienced player. They get to the young players. So Melbourne still had, I think, five or six players under 50 games in their team on the weekend. So saying to Cozzy Pickett just before the ball's bounced after halftime, Cozzy, we need you. I just need you. Come on. Give me something for the first 5 minutes. The moment he does something really well, you go over to him and you make a big deal of it. You make him feel like he's running over the top of the ground. You make him feel like the contribution that he just made was so important. And you've got to get a lift. You've got to go from one to the next, and you get a lift. And once you get a lift out of three or four, five, six, seven, eight start to follow on. And that's what good senior players are able to do.
So the three of you watching that game on Friday night, did you wake up on Saturday morning and think that Brisbane looked a bit slow? Or was it just that Melbourne were too good?
I thought it was Melbourne too good.
I thought it was Melbourne. Yeah, you know, who's it saying more about?
Yeah.
I thought it was all Melbourne.
Yeah. I think Melbourne are the best team in it.
Yeah.
At the moment. It's hard to argue. Brisbane are pretty good.
Yeah.
They weren't. They're not fast.
No, well, they're not.
But they move the ball all right. So that's you don't necessarily need to have leg speed for that.
The one area that I noticed for Brisbane is when the ball moved fast, Brisbane then looked really gettable, particularly down. Like Harris Andrews was just getting a fist in the second half at times, whereas he'd usually be there in that position. So that's what I noticed. Once the overlap run started, the fast ball movement started, the get over the back started, Brisbane were... Their defensive setup was well out of place, and they look susceptible.
Because sometimes there's a difference between looking slow and looking tired. Yeah. Brisbane had won seven in a row. It just looked that they weren't quite up for the fight when Melbourne got rolling in that second half. And that's okay, considering how long they've been up for.
Yeah, I'm not disappointed or, you know, down on Brisbane. I just thought it said more about Melbourne. Like they've run into the best team who's complete at the moment.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Where's... What Melbourne aren't wanting for anything, are they? Positionally?
No, they're going okay. And
no Viney. Sorry, if they had no Viney or Langdon in that midfield either.
Yeah, well, those two come back for a while. Langdon definitely comes back in. Viney will come back in, no doubt, when he's fit.
Makes them better.
Too good, they were. Brisbane still in the top four, 8-4 after 12 rounds. This is Port Adelaide looking to put them out this weekend.
Just on that, you consider how we're talking about Brisbane to start the season. We're sort of scratching our head going, what's going on here? Now, to turn where they are at 8-4, I think they'll be very happy.
Well, the term half-locks they use, boarding house puddings, they de-pudding themselves, didn't they?
They de-puddinged. They did de-pudding. It's exactly what they did. Are we talking prelims for the Ds at the moment? Are we talking if they don't make a prelim, it's a fail now? Do we look that far ahead, or are we just worrying about this game in front of us?
No, you have to, because they're the top two side.
Yep, okay.
And what? Look, injuries, we've always put the asterisks on injuries. You still need good luck going forward. Like, you just don't know what's going to unfold.
Yeah. Well, yep.
The reality is, at the moment, Huff, they're three games clear inside the top two. Now, they've played one more game than
Geelong.
Port Adelaide, which could push that up. But as it stands at the moment, they're three games clear inside the top two.
They've got the Land Rovers parked. Yes. Fresh set of RM Williams, bone coloured chinos, and a nice little tartan shirt to take the cheese platter with. First final at the MCG.
That's
on a Friday
be magnificent.
Night.
Magnificent. 7:25, we'll get to a break.
And the fest. little puffer vest.
What are you trying to wear? And he's got the check shirt.
Yes, he's very demonized today. Yeah,
have you got the chinos on?
He's in theme.
It's like our replacement man out the back. That's his sort of get up.
Real.
The man out the back has got a chino in every color.
Full palette.
Yeah. We'll get to a break. Got plenty more to talk about after round 12. Jimmy Bartel with us in the Monday footy review on The Breakfast Club.
That's his craft. He's a dangerous small forward. He gets lots of shots at goal, and to get 7 shots at goal, he's probably going to be best on if he kicks 6-1 instead of 1-6. So he's had a fair game, but he just hasn't done the last part of it. And that's put the ball through the sticks. But yeah, you know, that's part of the game. He's a professional, needs to keep working hard, and sometimes you have days where it just doesn't happen for you. But he just needs to get his routine right, and he's just one of a number of players that we're still working through that as well.
29 past 7 on a Monday morning. Great to have Jimmy Bartel with us in the Monday footy review after round 12. That is the voice of Brett Ratton, the coach of the Saints, who were not victorious in their quest to defeat the Sydney Swans at the SCG on Saturday. They went down by 9 points, but they did have a few chances. And he was talking about Jack Higgins, Jim.
Yes.
Who kicked 1-6.
Yes. I did this game. He was so good, but without doing the final bit.
Yep.
Look, from the minute the game started, he was finding the footy, he was marking, he's leading, kicked the hardest one of the lot, mind you. Yeah, it's always the case, isn't it?
Off in the way.
Mm. Yeah, about 40 out on the boundary, snapper in the corner.
This is something that's always frustrated me. So a player will practice endlessly about kicking goals from the boundary, snapshots, this, that, and the other, but they don't practice in the V, where most goals, most chances are.
See, I'd be surprised if they didn't do that. That surprised me.
Okay, so Cadinia Park, there's always a spot where you walk off the ground and you stand there. You stand there endlessly kicking goals there in that position.
Yeah, maybe I was different because I'd always get out and practice them. Personally, I always used to buy a bag of footballs off the property steward, and I'd throw them in the back of the car. Because that was, for me, my release from football was to realise why I played footy, which was fun, kicking the ball at the park. So I'd take the dog up the park every Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon and have shots at goal. Just a bit of fun. Yeah, you kick 10 through, hopefully find a little kid walking around going, hey, I'll give you $5, I'll kick him back to me. Yeah. So I didn't have to go chasing, but It was a technique thing in the end. He even tried to run around the second last one. I'll hit it on the move. So he was trying different things. Brett Ratton, if he kicks 6 goals, 1, he'd be probably best on ground. He would be clearly best on ground.
Yes.
23 and 6. That's
a good day.
That's a monster day. But you know, I felt sorry for the guy because he wasn't the only reason why they lost. And this is the thing. We'll focus on his last 2 shots. But Seb Ross missed one from 2 metres out. They had 17 centre bounce clearances and didn't score once.
Which is remarkable at the SCG.
Which is harder to do than you think.
Yeah.
Not even a rushed behind.
Yeah, but Max probably couldn't catch a cold on Saturday.
He still did what he had to. Like, he kicked a couple. But even some of their defensive position, they got caught out at the SCG because you can get really short in defence. A couple of times they got caught out there. So there was a number of other areas for the Saints.
Yes, I mean...
But let's talk about goal kicking.
Let's do that because I'm ready.
Here you go.
You ready, Waddy?
He's fully armed. He hasn't said a word for 10 minutes. He's been doing that.
Yeah. I've been asking some maths questions.
Doc Wielden over there. Can I just highlight a few things before you go into the goal kicking, how it's changed? And I know it is one area of the game. It's the line we always use. The one area of the game that hasn't improved rapidly.
That's true.
But there are a few elements. This is not a defense of all you poor goal kickers because you should be working on it. But there are elements to it.
Okay. Now you're going to get some kickback on these from our man. Just
I hope so. I hope so, because let's discuss it in a mature way, Daniel.
There's no chance of that.
No chance of that. This gets him very emotional. A lot more players on the field are taking shots these days than back in the glory days.
Yep.
Because it was the traditional full forward and even your centre forward. If your goal kickers, if you kick 15 goals, your your full forwards probably kick 7.
Yep.
Seven centre forwards kick 3 and you get some little
ones and twos.
Yep.
Also, fatigue factor.
Oh, don't mention that around here.
We're taking shorter time to take the shots.
Yes.
We are. Well, it's clearly. When did timing come into the game?
Not long ago.
So you can't me on that one.
I haven't said anything.
Yeah, I did.
That was Rama.
You can't on that one. Whoever threw the in.
That was Rama.
I did.
He's coming. The other
fella's
coming.
Because I'm with Boomer here. Players don't practice goal kicking under fatigue.
And this is where I'm going to now agree with you guys. Players don't practice under fatigue, and it is a mental game still, and that's why we still haven't conquered it. Because really, the little man gets on the shoulder. There's some crowd around. The moment of the game, the game awareness comes into play. I've missed the last three or four. It's being able to diagnose your kicking. That's the key to it. Getting out to training, as you're talking, Rama. If I've missed one right, you should be able to know why you've missed one right. That's the art of goal kicking.
But that's got nothing to do with fatigue.
It does have a lot to do with fatigue.
Of course it does.
What? Mentally not being able to do it under pressure.
Can I get you to run four times up and down the hallway here?
And then see if you can nail a putt.
My counter-argument to that is, and you can say it's naive and I don't care, is that these forwards...
So why would we say anything?
Because these forwards that are paid to kick goals go all the way up to half back and all this sort of rubbish.
I agree.
Don't get so tired. You won't get so tired if you stay closer to home.
I should have just thought of that when I did the 3K time trial. Just don't get tired.
No, but these forwards spend all their time running all the way up and then they're all the way back. Just stay back. Just stay back. Stay in a dangerous spot.
Seriously, don't be one of those people. The game's played differently now. It is.
I hear that all the time.
It is.
Well, you know it is.
That's the way the coach wants you to play.
Yeah, but But someone then do it differently. Someone find a way
Matthew Scarlett changed the game for a defender and a forward, right? Because he would leave his forward in the goal square, and then he would go and stand 70 metres ahead of him and just continually mark the ball.
So as it stands at the moment, these are the four best goal kickers in the game, okay, who are key forwards. Tom Hawkins?
Yes.
Accuracy rate over the last 4 years, 61.68%. This is good stuff. Jack Revolt, over the last 4 years, Jack Revolt, average 64.9. Huh? Josh Kennedy, accuracy 64.8. And then Taylor Walker, 62.8. Now, the two emerging forwards in Norton and Mackay's average or accuracy over the last 3 years is 55%, and Norton's accuracy is 56%.
Did you use Jack Darling? Did I miss him?
I haven't put Jack Darling.
Yeah, maybe have a look at Jack Darling.
Yeah, well, I didn't have time to do that. Compare that to the two greats that I would say.
Who's an unbelievable hard worker.
Who's that?
Jack Darling.
Okay, but I'm just going, this is the stuff I've got. Lockett.
Don't interrupt.
Lockett, 69% accuracy. Matthew Lloyd was 68.
Yeah, and
of the current players currently in the game that I would say I would be happy to kick for perhaps not my life, but maybe, I don't know.
For lunch.
You've got Ben McAvoy at 73% accuracy. And then you've got, interestingly, Cox, Oscar Allen, and Tom McDonald all at 68% accuracy.
Mm. Mm. It's also where you're taking your shots as well.
Correct.
But I will argue that Norton... has got a problem.
How you're being told to move the ball up and down the
ground. Norton has got a problem. Because
last night he did, no doubt.
Yeah, but he has had a problem on a few games.
He's pushing them all left.
No, I'm with you on Norton.
Yeah, it cost the Bulldogs against Richmond. Mm. It cost the Bulldogs against Melbourne, where he had a really important shot. Didn't kick it. Went down the other end. Melbourne got a goal. 12-point play. They got away. And Mackay cost Carlton.
If I was Aaron Norton, I'd be putting a phone call into Matthew Lloyd or Scott Lucas being a left footer.
I'm with you on Norton. And we know that Mackay is not comfortable on the... What side is it? The right? Left side? He's better around the corner than he's straight up and down.
That's fine.
Because that's maximising your opportunity. That's being understanding your game.
As a key forward, though, surely, that's meant to be being paid all this money, he's got to be able to trust himself as a drop punt shot at
Why?
Goal.
Why drop punt? Doesn't matter, does it?
Well, I think it does. I reckon under pressure, there's more that it could go wrong with that kick around the body than it would be a drop punt from 30 metres out.
But that's why they do that kick, because there's not as much that can go wrong.
So you use Jack Revolt as an example. Go and look in those last 4 years how many snaps Jack has done from a set shot.
And I would argue that he shouldn't be doing that.
But that's his accuracy. But that's why his accuracy has probably improved.
It's actually gone backwards.
But it might be with Norton and Harry Mackay, a mechanical thing for them. Like the snaps, you look at the way Harry Mackay drops the footy on his set shots. When he misses, he drops on the outside, which is okay when you're snapping.
But my point is that they've got to get better. They've got to find a way to get better. For me, I'm worried if I'm a Bulldogs coach and almost a Bulldogs player that as good as Norton is, he's going to let his team down in high-pressure environments in finals.
I heard Oscar Allen talking recently. So Oscar Allen, Josh Kennedy and Jack Darling all went to the high-performance coach at West Coast Eagles and said, we need to put a premium on our goal-kicking.
That's great.
So rather than after training and all that, sort of when you're mucking around doing set shots, they put the premium on it in training. So if they miss a drill and they're doing set shots for goal under fatigue, that's much more important than the extra K and a half they may run in that running in the training session. So they've gone themselves as a group of key forwards and said, this is what we want to do. This is what we need to do for our career.
Yep.
Yeah, we used to do that at training, that insert goal kicking during training.
Correct.
And the way they do it is, say if the drill was down one end, the whistle would be blown and you'd have to sprint down to the other 50 and you'd grab all the coaches would be sort of lined up on the 50. So you'd hit one on the run.
Yep.
Go get your own footy, schoolyard stuff, back out, and then you'd have to take the set shot. So that was the fatigue. You know, you're trying to recreate the fatigue. So sprint down, take a set, hit one on the run, which is important, get it, come back out. You got the 30 seconds to hit your set shot, and then training back on. So they're just constantly blowing throughout training. So it'd be getting used to, you know, taking the shot under fatigue.
Yep.
Jeez, you're getting some big numbers here with Jack Darling. To back up your point.
Well, what's the number?
Well, I'm really trying, right?
He can't work out the maths. Needs to ask you again.
Nick Larkey's going at 77%.
Yeah, he's going well.
77%. Sample size, all that sort of stuff. A lot of factors involved. But your point about Norton and Mackay is well made. Yeah. I think most of us would agree with that.
And I reckon West Coast win games that they might not otherwise win because of their ability to convert their opportunities.
So when you watch Norton and Mackay, do you think their set shot routine is exactly the same every time?
No.
Norton spends most of his time looking at the screen to see how much time he's got left.
So the really good goal kickers, the really, really good ones of all time, they did not change. Their routine was exactly the same every single shot.
And predominantly full forwards throughout their junior career and throughout their AFL career. Norton was a key back for his junior career. And technically,
he's going to be a gun key forward.
He's a gun key forward. But also, a lot of the guys you're talking about with West Coast are technically very sound with their bulldog. Oscar Allen, for a big guy, is technically very sound. Flan Ryan is technically very sound. Although we used to giggle with Kennedy with his... You watch his hand to foot.
Same every time.
Jack Darling, very sound.
70.9% Jack Darling in his last 4 years.
70.9. Jack Darling.
But ball movement helps where you're taking the shots.
Yeah. You're in the V.
Yeah, West Coast. 30 metres out in the V.
You need to do some more research on categories V and outside.
And key forward versus small forward. So we've been talking about Jack Higgins, small forward, taking shots from boundary.
Jamie Elliott Saturday night, his first four goals in the V.
If Jamie Elliott didn't kick like that, Collingwood would not have won the game.
No, that's correct.
They simply would not have won the game.
Correct.
But I just don't think there's enough premium placed on that part of the game.
I disagree
compared
with that.
To 18-man zones and all this hard defensive running and forward pressure. Just kick the goal, mate.
Oh, I think that's a bit of a blanket statement that we've got into. They don't practice goal kicking. I'd be very
But the players surprised. Complain that they don't.
We'll do something about it.
Take your career into your own hands.
Interesting point. So if you're Brett Ratton, Rama, Jim, Whitey, if you're Brett Ratton, what are you taking out of that game? What do you say? End of the game. You're sitting 5-7 now. That would have got you 6-6 and halfway after a relatively disappointing start. Which would have been amazing. Correct. Spot on. Form letter had them have a tough draw, so they got a chance to open up on the back end. What do you say?
I reckon it's so difficult for Brett Ratton. We've said this a few times. It's how hard you go. They've still got the same issues too. Like they get burnt on turnover, outspread, bit of creativity off halfback. I know they put Brad Hill down there, which I thought early in the game he was getting it in bad spots. As the game wore on, he got it in really good spots, which was being a bit more creative. I thought Jimmy Webster was pretty good across half back for a fair bit of the game.
Yep.
But with Max King down, like, well, he played, but you know,
he was injured.
He was injured, so he was anchored to the goal square. Tim Membry, so there was a lot of positives half, but they do just miss a couple, don't they? They're just missing personnel. I don't know whether that they've got it on their list yet or they still need to add to their list.
Outside of the first sort of 20 minutes, the game was an arm wrestle all the way through, really. Sydney got a bit of a break leading into the back end of the third quarter, start of the last quarter, and then they kept coming the same. So there's a bit to like. They just couldn't finish, couldn't execute under the pressure, I suppose.
Next four for the Saints, the Crows by Richmond, Collingwood, Brisbane.
Crows by Richmond, Collingwood, Brisbane.
Two. I think it's 50-50 with the Crows. Crows are going well. Richmond's going to be tough. They should beat Collingwood, and Brisbane should beat them.
I talked about those tiebreaker games. I always talk about it at the start of the year. St Kilda haven't won enough of those so that when they come up against games against Richmond, Brisbane and Port Adelaide, they're just too far behind.
Yeah.
They're just not quite good enough.
The Swannies continue on, even though there is... Who was saying before that there's some concern about their spot?
I just think that, you know, Josh Kennedy doesn't... He just can't quite get going this year. Callum Mills has gone through a bit of a flat spot. When they were really good at the start of the year, it was largely due to their young players playing extremely well. They're not quite going as well as they were. I think their future's absolutely bright, but just at the moment, they're just going.
So they go Hawthorn, which they should win, then a bye. Then the next, their three after the bye will sort them out. They go Port Adelaide, West Coast, Western Bulldogs.
Where are they?
Port Adelaide is away. West Coast is at home. And then the Bulldogs is away.
Subject to change, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, probably don't get too deep into that just at the moment, because who knows? Who knows? Fair point. Call to eight. We'll get to a break. More to talk about after this, and talk about the Magpies and their performance over Adelaide. Then we'll get to Dreamtime, because that was some sort of game and some fascinating data coming through on the back of that. We'll do it after this with Jimmy Bartel, the Monday Footy Review.
You've joined the Breakfast Club.
We didn't get it right to start the game, and we're extremely frustrated. All this about the fact that we weren't able to get the result in a way. It's one we gave away in the end. With all respect to Collingwood, that it's a great win for them, but we gave them the ball back over and over, and it's hard to defend when you do that. Unfortunately, it's one that got away.
One that got away for the Adelaide Crows. It was 23 shots to 18 at Adelaide Oval on the weekend against the Magpies, lost by 5 points. They had their chances. The Pies got off to a flyer. Jamie Elliott, your boy Rammer, with 4 first quarter goals, blew the game apart. And in the end, that was the difference, despite the fact the Crows came back and had plenty of looks. Jim.
They did. They did a lot right. If you're the Adelaide coaching staff and you're looking at the statistics, yeah, contested ball, uncontested. But what they didn't do well was they allowed Collingwood to mark the footy too much. And no, I've been banging on about this. If you allow opposition to have 100 uncontested marks, it's very difficult to win the game.
115 marks, the boys.
Yeah, 100 of those uncontested. Correct. That means you can take territory, you can play the game in your half, you take the pressure off your back line, and you actually are able to be released from pressure yourself.
The Crows executed really poorly in those last couple of minutes. You look when they won the ball eventually in those dying moments, they're going backwards.
They kept going backwards. How annoying was that?
It was like, what are you doing? Now, I understand Collingwood probably had players sitting behind the ball, but just take the ball forward. Give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance to lock the ball in your front half to try and get a restart.
That was annoying. I was really annoyed by that.
So, look, credit to the Pies.
No, look, it was a great performance for Collingwood.
Credit to them. They've been under so much pressure. It was a really tricky day for them, obviously, with travel. And
they're getting breath tested halfway through the bus trip. Yeah,
it was just... But to their credit, they went over and got a win. Good on them.
With a lot of really important players out of the team. Mm. And it's kind of like, doesn't matter how they got it done, they just got it done. Champion Data have that thing, and I'm going back to this thing about taking your opportunities, about expected score. And based on expected score, Adelaide should have won that, I think, by about 16 points, 18 points.
Sounds about right, yep. Mm.
So, in a lot of ways, they were lucky. But there was a couple of times, guys, where Adelaide looked like they were getting away from Collingwood, and Collingwood sort of pushed against that. So I think there were some good signs out of that.
Bianco, Poulter.
Bianco, yeah.
Yeah.
Poulter's all right.
Poulter's okay.
Poulter's all right on the wing. Quainer, Quainer feels like he's already played 200 games.
He was good late.
Yeah.
He was really composed late in that game.
So you can see it if you're a Pie supporter, when it puts it all there, you go, oh, actually, there's a little bit of happiness. Like when you see those guys perform in crunch moments too, Bianco and Poulter.
Bianco's good.
So crunch moments, need to kick the goal. They did it. So that would make you happy as a Pie supporter. Oh, okay, I can see some, to borrow the Brendan Bolton term, some green shoots.
Or whatever.
Yeah, whether you win or lose and you're a developing team, you just want to give a couple of ticks. Sorry, twice.
So aggressive. You're emotional, aggressive.
But you just want to give a couple of ticks, whether it's a couple of young players, whether it's the way you play, whatever that is. You don't want to walk away with no hope going, oh, geez, where do we go from here?
So Jamie Elliott comes in, kicks six, right, has a fair day. And without him, as you said before, Whitey, they don't win. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So has some of the problem for Collingwood been talent-related? Is that why we see Collingwood where they are at the moment? We've talked a lot about system through the year with Collingwood, the way they play and defend and move the ball and that sort of stuff. But is that on the back of talent that's not out there, so they've had to find another way?
They've had one of their best players from each area not being the team for a long period of time. So Howe as a defender, Taylor Adams as a midfielder, Jamie Elliott as a forward.
And no Brody Grundy.
But they definitely tried to move the ball quicker. They definitely tried to move the ball quicker early in that game against Adelaide, gave Elliott a chance.
That's what I'm saying. Is that talent-driven as well, the mindset and their ability to do that, or their confidence in doing that more so?
Yeah, I don't know. They just seem to want to play on more from half-back and try and get the ball into the corridor a little bit more. Maybe they could do that a lot easier against a team like Adelaide than a better team. I'm not sure.
I've got a question for you, Waddy, and Rammer, I know you can't answer this, and Half, and Waddy. Darcy Cameron, is he the you stick with? There's no debate about he and Mason Cox when he's right. You know, I know Mason's got the injury, but is it Darcy Cameron? No,
he reminds me a bit of Jesse White at Collingwood. He's just that player that will tease.
Not Spencer White.
The great
White Hope.
From St Kilda. The next Lance Franklin.
Yes, that was a forward call.
It was an aggressive call. Half?
Well, I'll tell you what he did do. He said to everyone in the last 2 minutes, then I can be that guy for you. His last couple of minutes really did show that they could trust him. Now, whether they can do that week in, week out, who knows? I haven't seen enough of him. But he was really important the last couple of minutes to stop Adelaide's any chance of having them to win that game. So I think that puts some credits in the bank for Darcy. Mm. Don't know what it means for Meso. Not sure. Is he fit yet?
Yeah, he's fit now. Yep. The one other area for Collingwood was Pendlebury played a lot more across halfback.
He did. Good pickup.
A lot more across halfback. So you talk about ball movement, Pendlebury was able to bite off that kick through the middle of the ground, whereas other defenders over recent weeks have taken the easy wide option. Pendlebury comes back in the middle of the ground because he creates space and time around himself. And that, as then, if you're playing through the middle of the ground or a forward, you want to lead there. You don't continue to lead to the car park.
It was remarkable that they lost that game when you think about the dominance they had from Laird and Keys and Half's man, the Ruckman, O'Brien, Seedsman. They had so many players that dominated through that part of the ground, and you walk away and they haven't won.
Yeah, but it was all this. It was all Hamble.
No, I understand that.
Yeah. It's all Hamble. Like
Sloan, he was pretty good at times.
Sloan was good.
I know it's tough knocking them when they've played super games, but it was just reflective of Adelaide. It was going nowhere with it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'll tell you what, had they won that game and gone into the break at 5-7, we would have been sitting here going, what the hell has happened? Maddie Nix is a coach of the year.
Yeah, so you've got to remember, we were asking the question of each other before the start of the season, who finishes on the bottom, Adelaide or North Melbourne?
Yeah.
They've done a terrific job in the first half of the season, the Crows.
Absolutely they have.
They've been brilliant. They've been absolutely brilliant.
It's largely due, though, I think, to their very good players on their senior players playing well every week.
Haven't they Rory Sloan for...
No, but the...
He's been out a lot.
Yeah, and that's right. But their players, they've been
Matt
very
Crouch
good, reliable. The ones that have played, you know what I'm talking about. But Keys has become one of those players them.
Good win by the Pies under duress. Certainly from a travel condition perspective on the weekend. Adelaide still going okay, but they will rue that one, I reckon, and Manny Nix you said before. The Bont's had 27-2. He's kicked 15 goals this year, the Bont. He could end up with 30 goals. And for a guy that
would suggest the Brownlow medal.
Well, it's got to go close. If he kicks 30, he's got to be going close to winning the medal.
So the year before Dane Swan won the medal, he was favourite, I think, Jim, if I recall. And then the following year, he went and kicked all the goals. And just cleaned them up.
He had big moments again last night. You know, bomb goals from outside 50 where the game was sort of just teetering. He had some special moments. That last quarter, been a feature of him.
The last quarter centre clearance where he walked through Mundy's tackle, blind turn, then hit up a tackle. It's just like...
Because that game was on the line.
Yeah, it was.
Midway through the third, it was
Yep.
on the line. They were struggling. Someone had a shot. Freo guy had a shot and missed it. And had he kicked that, I reckon it would have been a very, very different outcome for the whole game, I reckon.
So
it's to your point, goal kicking.
Yeah, so as good as McRae is because he's just an accumulator and he's so methodical and he kicked the ball very well again last night. It's just those moments that's what the superstars have. That's why Jimmy Bartel was a superstar, because when the moment was there, he delivered on the moment. And that's what the best players do. And that's why Marcus Bonapelli's up in the top three.
We were two rounds, sorry.
we're sitting here. No,
I was looking at who scored that point. It might have been the big Rock Lobster, Rory Lobb.
It was. It was a great ball moving to get it to him, and he missed it. And even the world champ who was sitting there watching with me, she goes, oh, that's going to cost him.
Yeah.
So she was all over it. But
just on the Bonton Brownlow and goal kicking, goal kicking mids, they catch your eye big time.
So McRae had 35 just in terms of disposals.
Just a boring day for McRae.
Mundy 30 with a point. Brayshaw had 27 with a goal. Bontempelli 27 and 2. Hunter 27 and 1 in terms of just sort of key players there.
Did I see somewhere last night with McRae on Twitter, in 20 minute quarters, it's 24 games that he's had over 30 possessions. So this year he's had it, obviously in the 12 that they've played, he's had over 30, but I think if you go all the way back to 2019, it's 24 games in a row now he's had over 30.
He gets a lot of the footy.
He gets a lot of the footy.
He knows how to find it.
Without a dominant ruckman giving them good service necessarily in stoppages either.
So you can get a lot of the footy.
So I got beaten stoppages last night.
Mm. Yeah. You get a lot of the footy and go, oh, okay, let him have the... He gets a lot of the footy and he uses it very well.
And that's where he's improved.
I think that's been the big shift for him, and what I've noticed, especially this year, is... His inside work, but then his handball. He's always been a big handballer at first, but he actually is taking an opponent out of the game with his handball. So he's taking the tackle and releasing, which is actually allowing the next person, you know, to square the shoulders up and actually be really dangerous. Where I think early in his career, it's not a big knock on him, but it was just like, you take it. And I even reckon if you compare that with Clayton Oliver's rise. Clayton Oliver has always been a super player, but he's gone to another level. Yeah. He uses his feet going, I'm going to take away from that first 1 metre, 2 metre bubble, then release.
Yeah.
I think McRae is doing that in the last 18 months. It's like, all right, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to move. You've got to actually tackle me. Yeah, you know, we even talk about it with Ben Cunnington, what makes him really good clearance player is, I'm just going to create the outnumber. If you don't come to me, I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And he's kicking the ball a lot more forward to centre as well.
Moving the game forward.
Now, so the key factor I thought last night was the difference in the game between Footscray, how am I going? Western Bulldogs and Freo was the ability of the Dogs to find targets inside 450. It was 19 marks to 9 or something.
That's a lot.
Inside 450, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's where you win the games. But moments from the champs certainly help as well, like DeBont, who's going at 53% accuracy, by the way.
Over his career?
Yes.
Or just
that's over his career.
Yeah, see, and he's improved considerably in the last 12 months in that area. Mm. Considerably.
How much?
Yeah. I'll find out during the news because it takes time.
Come on, propeller head, get the numbers.
All right, we'll get to the news. Johnny Badden has got the latest. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Dreamtime game in the West on Saturday night between Essendon and Richmond and Carlton West Coast as well.
Carlton fans, give us a call. You might need some therapy this morning.
You've just been nasty. Now you're being nasty.
That's bullying.
That is bullying. He's been. Look at him. Look, chuckling over there. Look at his little chuckle face over there.
Don't even expect to get a pass to down Ligon Street with that attitude.
Don't ever expect to get access to behind closed doors at Icon Park with that sort of attitude. I won't take you in. Johnny Bowden's got the news, and then we'll do some more footy reviewing on the Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel on The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a bit of not an error on my part, but we sort of knew Essendon would push hard forward at three-quarter time into the last quarter, and I sort of forgot to mention that to the players and probably caught us off guard a little bit with regard to our preparation defensive setup for that. So I was a little bit disappointed myself, but the players got it together by the end, and we managed to get the result, which is a lot better.
Quite a remarkable game that was Saturday night in WA Optus Stadium between Richmond and Essendon. Dreamtime in the West. It was a great experience for those that were there. Packed house, 55,656 in the house for that game. Two neutral teams at a fabulous venue. The light show was magnificent. The preparation, the whole event was something else, as it should be for Dreamtime. And we got a really interesting game of footy. In fact, quite remarkable in many respects. And the Tigers had a nice lead at three-quarter time. We thought, oh, well, it's going to be all over here. 22 points at three-quarter time. Within 11 minutes, the Bombers were in front, Jim.
Yeah.
And then the Tigers said, I've had about enough of that.
Yeah, whackety-whack.
We're going to go whackety-whack. Don't come back.
Are we ready for this?
I'm ready for this. I want the numbers that tell us what Richmond did throughout that last 20 minutes of the game, Whitey.
Do you want me to do it?
No, you do it. Okay. You're our numbers man today. Since real when, David King areas from you.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. When Essendon hit the from when Essendon hit the front until the end of the game, disposals.
So there's 13 minutes remaining when Essendon hit the front.
Game time.
Disposals, 79 to 38, Richmond's way.
79 to 38.
Contested possessions, 24 to 16.
CPs. 31 to 16.
Clearances 11-2.
Clearances 11-2.
Inside 50s 13-4.
Inside 50s 13-4.
Now, of those four, Jake Stringer did have the chance to put Essendon a goal and a half in front. So sometimes you'll see a team make a run, they get in front, but only by half a goal.
Yep.
And they can't get the next one. And then the team that has been in front gets it back and then holds on to the lead. That clearly happened with Richmond because they kicked 7 goals in a row.
Didn't hold on to the lead. It was like they tilted the whole entire ground to one end.
It was like you look at the worm on all the stats sheets and the AFL website and the app, and the stairs down. Like it's a 17-story building. They've just got stairs straight down.
Yeah, I'll take the ramp.
It was unbelievable.
It was like the big drop from Dreamworld.
So in the last 13 minutes, they had 31 more disposals, 15 more contested possessions, 9 more clearances, 9 more inside 50s.
And seven more goals.
So my house at that stage when Essendon went ahead was jumping around.
Rocking.
Yeah, it was rocking. And I said to my youngest son, I said, well, there's a long way to go here still. And then a shot went to the Essendon forward line. And you see him smiling and laughing. And then you see Harry Jones at the back, the youngest forward probably in that group, going, no, hang on, there's still plenty of time. But the others are still... I think Essendon thought they had the game won.
Yeah. It was a powerful surge, though, wasn't it? Like they were, for about 5 or 6 minutes, it was irresistible football.
For Essendon.
Yeah.
It was terrific. Yeah.
Just on this run.
But that's scary from the Tigers, to be able just to drop the hammer like that.
Yeah.
But this is Essendon's issue all year. And I know there's a lot of positives to come out of the Bombers, so we acknowledge that. We'll go through the positives. But still, it's the same issue where you get beat. You 100 points off turnover.
Correct.
And I know they've ran into the best side in the last 4 to 5 years of punishing you for any mistake. That's Richmond in a nutshell. We'll just punish you off turnovers. But 100 points.
Yeah, slightly skewed with the back end the last...
No, but still,
but skewed, still 100 points, you're right.
Skew whatever you want. It's 100 points.
Sounds like me.
Stick your chicken skewers.
Slightly skewed, but your point is valid.
It's more than valid because that's a lot.
Yeah. Can't be more.
So a lot of Essendon supporters will go, Super-like. Oh, they played well. But I think that's a real missed opportunity.
Massive.
For the football club.
Great learning opportunity.
Nah. Yeah, great learning opportunity. No doubt about that.
They lose the battle, but they, you know what? They might win the war eventually.
Yeah, I'm with you on that half.
That's 11.
There's a lot to
that's
like
11
about
in a row now for the Tigers.
Don't worry about it.
A great opportunity.
Can I borrow a bit
don't
something?
Worry about that.
Can I borrow a bit something from when Brisbane had that year where they had 5 wins, but everyone goes, "Oh, how good was Brisbane that year?" But it was you heard Chris Fagan and the people out of Brisbane going, in a strange way, it was good that we only won 5 because they didn't come back thinking, "Oh yeah, we've made the big jump." It's like, hey, it's always just a stick. You only won 5 games.
Yeah,
I feel like this. I'm probably touching on your point half. You want to win. But this, it will sound strange. You want to win, but it's good for Rutten in a way because we're not there yet. Like, we're doing exactly a lot. Right. So we've got to still sharpen up. You've got to be 4 quarters. You've got to be concentrating. We've got clearly some room for improvement with defending a turnover, even with our ball use, when to go quick, when to go slow, when to get our back set up, how aggressive to be with our starting position. So there's obviously lots of positives, you know, personnel-wise, you know, Darcy Parrish. You know I like Waterman because I just love watching him kick goals. He can thump them, simple set shot routine. Harry Jones, Cox, all these sort of guys. But there's still a lot to improve, which is good.
And that's the reference that Rutten's got now. He can say your best can match it with the best, but it can't match it for long enough, and that's your challenge. Yes. It's as simple as that.
So what was most significant for the Tigers in that last quarter? So Bolton kicks, so of their seven goals, whatever they kicked, Bolton kicks two, Martin kicks one, Castagna one, Rioli one, Bolter one is the only tall player. And then McIntosh won.
And that was sort of junk time stuff. Like.
Yeah. So that wasn't, it wasn't necessarily getting into the tall forwards.
You know what the best...
Slightly skewed, Jim. Yeah. Slightly skewed.
Bolton was off the charts, off I the know. Charts. But I'll tell you one person that just sort of just got himself going again for the first time in a while is Dustin Martin. Mm. He's just been going around. Big game, big moment for the club. Yep, it's time to play.
27-3.
Time to play.
What he does. He was fantastic. But this Bolton fella.
Yes.
This Bolton fella. Now, I know there's some numbers being thrown around at the moment as to what Richmond are going to need to keep him. I don't think they'll need necessarily market rate because he might want to stay and be awesome with them. But he is worth, on the open market, he is worth a he is a remarkable footballer.
21-3 on
Saturday night. He does things that I don't think anyone else can do.
He's a game breaker.
He dances.
Yeah. He's a match winner.
Yeah. His feet are so good.
Yeah, I love
something else.
Sorry, I love when players get to that point where they realise that they've got an attribute where they actually understand their attribute. So it's like if you go through them, big Tim Tam Tom down at Geelong, Hawkins. I'm just bigger and stronger, so I can just put my arm out and protect the drop zone.
Yep.
Dustin Martin, when he goes, no one's actually going to bring me to ground and tackle. So I'll just keep running, and if you come to me, I'll just stiff arm you.
Yep.
Christian Petrarca, he's big. You know, evolution as a player, I'm just more powerful. Like, you might tackle me, but you're just going to be hanging on for dear life. So, no stress here. I'll just pick up, keep running and weaving through.
Yep.
Bolton is one too where I'm just going to be faster and you can't tackle me. His ability to just stop and shift gears would probably make most people's knees blow out the front. It seriously is. Wouldn't it? There's a couple on the boundary line where he runs flat out and he just puts brake and you just hit a player drift past it. And then he goes, oh, I'm going to go again. And he goes from 0 to 100, you know, the car thing, instantaneously.
Yeah.
So he just knows that, as you said, I can just dance on anyone here. You're not going to ping me to the ground.
But you know, it's not just that, like, I 100% agree with you, but it's his awareness of what's around him as well. His peripheral vision must be extraordinary because he just knows what's happening in time and space.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Oh, you're over there. You're closing on the right. All right, stop. And then I'll go again.
For his size, he's very good around contest. So around stoppage, he's very, very good. He reads the ball well. He's able to get out of the contest.
Yeah.
But then when he has the ball in hand, something happens. But
the key to him, above all what you've just said, is that he actually craves the big moment. And you can't teach that.
He's a natural entertainer.
He actually wants to entertain, but he'll actually deliver on the entertainment.
A lot of players in big moments don't want the ball
in there. That's right. I know we want to talk about Carlton, but I just want to ask you one question. You've got your Adrian Dodoro. I know it's an Essendon question, but your Adrian Dodoro, who are you paying more money for? Parrish or Merritt?
That was my next question. Good. I was going to ask you the same thing because everyone's talking about Merritt through this season and what he's going to be worth and whether or not he's going to stay. But Darcy Parrish is their best player.
Yeah, he's their best player at the moment, yeah.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been their best player over the last 3 years, where Merritt probably has, in the midfield at least.
You only have to come good in the contract that year.
Yeah.
body of work for me, Merritt. And Merritt's only 26, so... Oh, Darcy, he's a great player, and he's going to be a star for Essendon for a long, long time. Mm. There's no doubt about it.
I wonder what they do.
Who would you pay more for, Jimmy?
I don't know. What medal are they playing for this week? Essendon, are they playing for...
They need to play for something.
The Mark Williams.
See the jealousy from other clubs. They just
no jealousy.
They can't promote big games.
Having Essendon, a bye. Having the bye off.
There'll be a medal for that, too.
Essendon just been able to promote big games. Like Geelong has to jump on the... We have to make a game for Geelong, the country round.
How much you
the
paying?
Country game.
How much are you paying for Darcy Parrish?
Yeah, manager.
What's he worth in Marketville?
Oh...
750? 800?
He's 750, isn't he?
He's got to be close.
He's definitely in that range.
He's a star.
Here's something. And what do they do? They've just paid all this money for Caldwell. And
well, actually, the Dunkley money.
Actually, here we are. Dylan Shiel.
The way to answer
Caldwell.
What club is lining up for Parrish?
The Giants will be lining up for him, Jim.
They've got a lot of mids.
I'm just trying to put it back on.
Yeah, I know you're trying to antagonise.
The club that's lining up for Parrish is Essendon. That they need midfielders, so they can't afford to lose any midfielders, I wouldn't have thought.
I just think it's an interesting conversation because I reckon at the start of the year, Parrish was probably a $500,000 player and Merritt was a $900,000 player. I'm not sure there's too much difference between the two of them there.
It's a good 1-2 punch. Just quickly, too, Essendon losing McGrath is a big loss.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a big loss. That hurt them early
defensive
in the game.
Running.
Yeah, correct. As a defensive mid, he's really, really important.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily have a midfielder that can come in and play that role. They're going to have to have a number of guys go through there, like Langford.
Okay, I reckon even now I admit too much Essendon.
I'm just saying. But you're saying they're going to make finals.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not say that.
Let's go back to the top. I've got Essendon winning 12 games. That may have them winning finals.
I don't think they'll be
I've said they're going to win six or eight all year.
Too much Essendon.
Look what's happened, Jim. Now the Bombers people are fighting against each other.
Let's give it a distraction then. Let's get him onside. The Daniel Harford medal, that's what the buy should be. You're good on a buy.
I was the
you're a very good holiday.
Could I blow out hard?
You're great on a holiday.
Oh, boy. Now, I want to get to the Blues after this, and Anthony in South Melbourne has been waiting for us. We're going to get to him straight away after the break. Anthony, stick around. You get a chance to have your say on what's happened at Icon Park. After their loss to the West Coast Eagles yesterday by 22 points in the end, a disappointing loss against a very undermanned West Coast Eagles. Lost a few soldiers on the way, no doubt. So do the Eagles. Pre-game and during the game. We'll talk about it after this on the Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel and those boys from the Bombers.
Take away the finals, the way we play. It's going to be more about how we train, how we prepare and how we execute. And right now we're not executing in a manner that you need to be able to do to win AFL games of football. And the scoreboard's showing it. Like we're not good enough. We're not there and we've got to get better.
4-8. That's the situation for the Blues as they face the bye this week after 12 rounds of 2021 AFL football. That's the voice, of course, of David Teague, the coach. And he's not good enough. Got to get better. Anthony in South Morang has been waiting for a little while. We appreciate that, Anthony. Good morning to you.
Morning, boys. I think the club's known as weak now and really soft. I think the documentary last year showed it when Adam Simpson said, you know, these guys aren't up for the fight. And I think other teams know that. David Teague at some point in his career or coaching tenure has to put a flag in the ground and change the culture. I mean, he had the chance after round two. I think that debacle against Collingwood when you had guys like Plowman laughing, Murphy, and then to pick Levi Casbolt. It's been fantastic for the club, but you can't play a guy on one leg when you've got other younger kids to come in. And then, you know, to have Mark Murphy during the week having a bit of a sook about being dropped and deserving to be a bit more loyal and a bit surprised that he's been dropped. I mean, his form's not up to it. I mean, he's had his chance to set a culture at this club. And for the 20 years that he's been there, or whatever he's been, and captain, he's set a losing culture. And it's time to change. I mean, we've got to move on from him. To have senior players, and I don't know what leadership he offers as a 33-year-old, when you've got a Hodge and a Lewis have done it at other clubs. And then you've got Stocker languishing at full back, the poor kid, when you've got our co-captain just running around on a wing, turning the ball over when he should be, you know, have a selfless role. I mean, David's got to set a culture and a standard, and it's got to start somewhere, because if it doesn't, we know what Carlton does. We get rid of coaches. And unfortunately, I don't think get rid of David's the answer, because we're going to have to start again. But he needs more help. He needs more support. But he needs to start investing in this youth that we drafted highly in and putting him in the middle and not relying so much on Cripps. And then the other thing, sorry to ramble on, but to have Ed Curnow playing a halfback flank, you know, tagging Cripps, was disgraceful. I mean, you got Dom Sheed, and the only two on ballers they had were Sheed and Gaff. You'd think, lock down one of them, and we'd easily go halfway to winning a game. But no, he doesn't do it. And then, you know, Matt Kennedy is another one that had 30 touches 2 weeks in a row in the reserves and doesn't get picked, but Jack Nunes gets picked ahead of him as a sub, and so does Murphy. I mean, it's time to move on from these guys. Sorry.
Anthony, thank you for your call. That is expressing a fair few views there, and are very consistent with a lot of Carlton people that have been talking on the socials, certainly in the last 15, 16 hours or so, Jim.
Yeah, I know we don't have a prize, but can you just give me his car or something for a week? Half, like, yeah, that was a great.
That was a good call. That's a very impassioned Carlton supporter.
He was detailed. He was
clearly frustrated. The eight losses this year for Carlton have been between 16 and 28 points.
I'm sick of hearing
that. I'm just giving you data.
I know.
You read into this what you like.
I'm taking it out on you because you're saying it, but I don't mean this personally.
Seven of them against top eight teams.
Seven of them against top eight teams. I'm just giving you data.
I know. But I'm going to be the Carlton supporter when you read this.
What they have been found to be is wanting when the moments have mattered. Round two versus the Magpies, they were in the game at three-quarter time. They're down by 9 points.
So, lost. Hang on. I'm being a Carlton supporter.
I'm giving you some data.
Yeah, I'm being a Carlton supporter.
Do you know how many goals they kicked in that last term?
I don't care. They lost.
They kicked one. It's important you know this, Jim. Round eight against the Dogs, they're up by 14 at three-quarter time. How many goals they kicked in the last quarter?
Don't care. We lost.
One. Round 11 against the Swans. Game's in the balance, down by three at three-quarter time. How many goals they kicked in the last quarter?
I'm assuming one.
One.
One. How many goals they kicked yesterday in the last quarter?
One.
We've got a problem.
Yeah.
That's just from a scoring perspective, Jim. That's getting it on the board as opposed to protecting it.
You raise a good point. I was being
one thing that was really obvious last night was watching that last quarter was the lack of spirit. The lack of determination, the lack of intensity.
We said that last week against Sydney.
But I reckon it was worse against West Coast.
And we saw images against Sydney where David Teague's imploring his team to lift.
That was the thing that, like, it wasn't a particularly good game yesterday, but that was the thing I thought, gee, you're fighting for your season. You're not saying you're fighting for your coach, but you're fighting for your season, and the lack of desperation was quite evident. I just want to put one thing on the table, which I think was an interesting thing. Yes, in yesterday's game, they had 10 players from other clubs playing in that game for Carlton. That's half the team had played at another club. And this year, they've played 36 players, 15 have played at another club. So I reckon there's got to be a lot of attention on list management as much as anything, because I'm not sure how many of them have made them a better team.
I don't know if we've got any data on this at the moment, Rammer. What would be the number of players average sort of at a club that would have played somewhere else? The sort of rotation rate.
Geelong would have a few.
Maybe five or six, maybe. I would have thought.
That number's going up half. Mm.
Brisbane and Port would have a few. Brisbane and Port would have a few.
Work out
how many. I don't know that many, but I know we can't all sit here and count them up because we've got a few minutes to go.
Now, West Coast didn't have anywhere near that many.
No, West Coast have a lot of...
West Coast had three playing yesterday.
When I watch Carlton, it looks like they're fighting against the game.
It's all hard. Go again.
It's all hard. It looks hard. It looks hard when they win the ball back. It looks hard when they kick a goal. It looks hard when they defend. The game looks hard to them.
They're what Melbourne were probably 18 months, 2 years ago, where they don't understand yet how each of them affect each other. And we keep singing Melbourne's praises, but I don't think Carlton have had that penny-dropping moment where they understand that if I defend and cut out the release mark, it allows my backs to set up. It allows my mids to have time. It allows my forwards to get up and actually put some forward pressure on. They don't understand that yet. And also, just on yesterday's game, Whitey, and our caller touched on it, West Coast made the adjustment after quarter time with their midfield. Now, if I'm Carlton and the game's in the balance, Nick Dananui is hitting it to Dom Sheed. So use Kerno, who we know has been a good stopper. Yep. Just take it away from him. Like, show us something else that can beat us. So there you go. You're trying to address where they're strong, which is Dananui hitting it to Dom Sheed. I saw too much of Zach Williams and Saad when the game is on the line. They're almost on the goal line.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to win the game and trying to win your season, you move Doherty back because of the injury to Newman.
Yep.
There you go. You've stabilised your back six. And Doherty can take the game on. He's played back six. Take a risk. Push Saad or Williams up to the wing. Or you put Murphy up to the wing and move Zach Williams to half forward. So at least then his kick is going inside forward 50.
Which is what they wanted him to be when they first got him anyway.
Yeah, so move him to half forward, not the wing. Yeah, come up, play high half forward, at least have a bit of creativity, get Saad up into the ground, get some overlap, and they're actually getting the ball through the middle of the ground instead of them being 1-2 metres watching the ball go over their head. Like, just some positional stuff they could have tried.
The scoring problem that you talk about, so Big Harry's kicked 38 for the year.
Yep.
Then you go to Eddie Betts at 17.
Yep.
Who's obviously in the twilight of his career.
But playing extremely well.
Yes, awesome. No doubt. No doubt. I'm not denying
it. Owies, he'd be there.
Matt Owies is next at 10. Then you go down to Gibbons. Then you go down to Gibbons at 8.
He's actually been all right, Grips though.
Oh, he's been good.
Yeah.
They don't have a dangerous forward line at the minute. They don't have enough contributing in that forward line. Now, McGovern hasn't played a lot, obviously, this year. He was selected. Kurnow. He was recruited. And then Charlie Kurnow is the other one.
Oh, we want to talk more about this with you tomorrow, half, about this thing about players from other clubs. Yesterday, Fremantle had 4. Bulldogs had 5. West Coast had 3. I reckon there's a bit to it. About
how many Melbourne got?
No, I don't know. I'll find out. I'm going to do some research on it during the day because I just wonder about building a culture, building a team when you've got guys coming in from other clubs all the time. Regardless of whether they're good or bad players, how much of that has an issue in building a culture? I don't know the answer to it, but I think it's worth investigating a bit more.
R&D said Melbourne have 4 on the weekend. R&D at the back telling us.
There's one thing is about picking and choosing.
Who builds your culture, players or coaches?
Well, I just want to say this one point. You can pick and choose players from other clubs to make them better. You can't just bring players in because you've made list management mistakes, so you try and make up for the mistakes that have been made in the past.
Geelong has 11 on their list.
On their list?
On their list.
Okay.
Most of them are playing, like in the 22.
It's an interesting discussion. We'll talk about it with Rockets
tomorrow,
but
they're coming into a successful culture, Jimmy.
Yeah. I wasn't answering question 1B.
Oh, you're just giving data away. Just like I was trying to
do. Data.
Okay, right. Well done to West Coast, by the way. That game, I think, saves them. Had they lost that, I reckon they were vulnerable.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially the injuries they've got.
Yep. But I think that might save them.
Whitey thought Essendon were coming into the 8.
This is
you antagonistic Essendon people.
He's my man and he's staying in.
He's my man. We are all each other's men. On Twitter, we put out a poll. Who would you pay more for, Darcy Parrish or Zach Merritt? Currently, Darcy Parrish is winning at 69%,
right,
according to the Twitter poll. So there you go.
Is that recency bias?
Possibly.
Absolutely.
Adrian Dodoro's voted twice.
One for each.
And he said, option 3. He's gone for C, option 3. Jim, nice to see you.
Good. I'm out to win the Daniel Harford medal for this week, I reckon.
The bye. I reckon you can win that. I reckon you can win that. You'll have to work hard, though. I was very good in the bye. Very, very good. Ram, we'll catch you Friday.